welcome back to Channel Chasers, the TV podcast from the Georgetown Voice, part of the Voice's Untitled Leisure Project umbrella of different podcasts. I am your host, John Block. With me today again is Graham Pirro.
Hello, everyone.
We're going to continue our discussion today of BoJack Horseman, doing another two episodes, as well as the latest episode of Rick and Morty. So let's start with some BoJack. Episodes 3 and 4. Episode 3 was called Hooray Todd Episode, which was a funny title, I thought. Very, very descriptive in a lot of ways. You were happy about it, and it was a Todd episode. What were your thoughts on this one, Graham?
I don't know if you've ever seen the movie Hail Caesar, but this definitely had a very much a Hail Caesar vibe. The movie directed by the Coen brothers, where Josh Brolin is like this fixer who runs around and just has to deal with like this crazy world around him and has to deal with all these different personalities. And he's sort of like this really wholesome, good guy. And I really got that vibe from this episode. I don't know. It was interesting to see Todd in like this position of having to run around and basically be the fixer for everything that happens in the episode. And yet I also really like the fact that they mixed in, you know, that his stupidity at times gets like when he signs for Mr. Peanut Butter and then now has like Mr. Peanut Butter now supports fracking because Todd signed the ballot for him. So I enjoy this episode a lot. Todd isn't one of my favorite characters because I can't find him kind of annoying, kind of one-dimensional, but I thought that this was a pretty clever way to use his character traits to, you know, throw a wrench into everything that's been happening so far this season.
See, I mean, I agree with some of that. I agree that I really like the episode also. I think the great thing about this was it really shows how far Todd's come as a character. I think I agree with you in that at the beginning of the show, he was probably the most one-dimensional character. And we talked about this on the last podcast about how a lot of like the supporting cast of characters has really grown in complexity. And I would say that Todd has grown the most out of any of the characters. I think he's a super interesting and complex character now. And we got to see a lot of that in this episode.
Yeah, I think I was looking for a bit more from between him and BoJack, because you're always waiting for that moment where Todd really turns the corner and realizes just how awful BoJack is to him. And I'm not sure if they're setting this up for later in the season, but it felt like they kind of regressed with this character, where you have that scene where BoJack comes back, and I guess the moment where Todd's like, I don't really care about where you've been, like, I don't want to talk about the last year, I need to know something now. I thought that was interesting, like, good agency on Todd's part. I just hope that they don't fall back into the trap of characterizing Todd and BoJack as, you know, BoJack essentially abuses and takes advantage of Todd. And, yeah.
See, I feel like that's not really where they're going at all. I thought that, like, the conversation they had was one that showed that Todd had developed a lot. Because I think, like, I mean, I think it's expecting a little much to be like, oh, Todd has to completely disown BoJack. But at the same time, like, you saw him do that partially. He was like, you know, when BoJack offered, like, oh, if you need a place to stay, Todd's immediately like, I'm going to go. And he's like, he's like pretty dismissive of like BoJack, like, you've been an asshole. And like, but at the same time, like, he like lived with him for a long time and they're very close. They're probably that, you know, Todd's probably the best friend that BoJack has had. And then BoJack has been there for Todd a lot of times, even though he hasn't been like a good person to Todd in a lot of ways. He's still been in his life a lot.
Yeah. That's,
so
that's
I think it's not reasonable to expect Todd to not care about BoJack totally. And I think he's like approaching it in a very mature way where it's like, I have a relationship with you and like, I don't like, I'm not completely abandoning that. But at the same time, like, I don't want to like have the same kind of like relationship we had before where it's like, you know, where, like you were saying, it was BoJack kind of abusing Todd and taking advantage of him.
That's a fair point. I think what they're setting up is for a sort of a reverse of that relationship where BoJack, you know, Todd is one of his only friends and BoJack is almost emotionally dependent on Todd now. Whereas Todd was physically dependent on BoJack before that. I guess I hope that's where they're going with it.
Yeah.
Because I think that'd be an interesting inversion of the previous relationship between the characters.
Yeah. I mean, so we were introduced to another character this episode who kind of, it will, I think will be part of BoJack's emotional support structure, however flawed and definitely very flawed it is. And that's Hollyhock with 8 last names that I am not going to.
That was a great running joke.
Yeah. BoJack's biological daughter, as we find out in the episode, really before the DNA test, as Todd has a line where it's like, yeah, I don't think we need to do the DNA test, as he's like eating donuts and like fell asleep.
That was hilarious.
I was like, yeah, that's BoJack.
Yeah.
And I think we'll talk about that more in episode 4, but I liked how over these two episodes their relationship developed. Within episode three, though, something that, like, is always very striking to me about BoJack is just how many jokes there are. It seems like every single line is a joke, and they're still able to do a story. Like, I know, like, when Todd was having the initial conversation with Princess Carolyn about going on the date with Courtney Portnoy, there was, like, all, like, the classic BoJack, like, alliteration jokes for, like, Courtney Portnoy's movies. And then Todd was, like, making other jokes.
That was just brilliant.
Another one of my favorites.
Always the visual gags.
Yeah, of course. Another one of my favorites was, it's when Todd's running, I think, to the like, lunch with Courtney Portnoy. And he's running there, and there's, like, a sheep that's holding a sign that's, like, the wold is ending. Like, W-O-O-L. And then when he leaves and runs back the other way, the sheep is sheared and is holding a sign. This is the end is sheer.
I didn't catch the second part. I caught the first part. That was really funny.
Great. And then, yeah, so this episode just had, like, a lot of strings, and then Todd was connected to all of them, obviously. I really liked how they did that. I liked how he was, like, the triangle player and, like, was this revered triangle player. It was kind of like a Good Will Hunting moment at the beginning where it was like, I hope he doesn't come. And then he doesn't come at the end and the line's like, great.
Yeah, and then when he's in the bathroom and there are just, like, a lot of setups and twists that I thought were really enjoyable. Like, when he's in the bathroom and he comes out and he makes a complete fool of himself.
Yeah, I got taco all over myself. Yeah. I couldn't open the
or
door
when
he, for
when
an
he's
hour.
Walking down the fashion, at the fashion show, and then he ends up, like, inspiring this new line of fashion from this.
Right.
Yeah, it's just a lot of different
things. He's like, oh, no, fashion should be, like, for everyone. And then, like, they agree, but then he, like, goes on the date with Courtney Portnoy, and he's like, oh, you're wearing the same clothes as me. And she's like, no, this hat cost $50,000, like, completely missing the point of what he was saying. So, yeah, I thought this was a really good one. I liked, from the BoJack side, with that conversation he had with Todd, it's like, there's, like, a new sentimentality to him that I think we've been seeing developing, in that, like, he understands how, like, shitty of a person he is, but it's still that shitty of a person. So you get kind of this weird, like, meta-ness of, like, I know I've been horrible to you, and, like, you've been a good person to me, and that's bad, but, like, there's really nothing there that suggests that will change if, like, they continued, which is kind of an interesting dynamic.
Yeah, it definitely is shying away from, like, the, you know, the cliche trope of BoJack becoming this changed person because of something, and now he and Todd are just going to get along fine, which really is not realistic at all. That's not the way it usually works in real life. So just, like we talked about this last week, but just testament to the show that they're able to set up these narrative tropes and then just completely twist or undermine them, but not in predictable ways. And in ways that stay true to the characters while still giving them emotional development that feels natural.
Mm-hmm. All right, so I guess let's move to episode four now, Commence Fracking. I like how many fracking puns they used. There was even a line where I think it was Diane's boss at a Girl Crush, which is just a hilarious name. It's like, oh, everyone loves fracking because it's so fun to say. It's like frack, frack, freak, frack, frack. it is a fun word to say. And then Diane also correctly points out, like, it's also kind of horrible. but I think there were, like, two main threads in episode four. One was BoJack and Hollyhock trying to find Hollyhock's mother, and then Mr. Peanut Butter and Diane and kind of their feud over the whole fracking situation, and, like, their relationship problems. So which would you want to start with first?
Let's talk about BoJack and Hollyhock.
Yeah.
Because I think that seems like it's going to be the central sort of A story of the rest of the series.
Yeah.
And I think it certainly gets the most amount of screen time. I was a little worried that it was going to fall into the sort of, you know, the, oh, I now have a daughter, therefore I have to be a good person. But I trust the show too much to think that. I just thought it was... Like, it was pretty clear that, you know, when they go to find her mother and it's the first person, it just turns out to be this, like, insane fan who was in love with BoJack. Like, that was just, that's just, like, pure BoJack hilarity. And the way that they get out of there is just great, with BoJack having sex with her while Hollyhock steals the journal or the
it's like the scrapbook of all the women that BoJack book. Had slept with.
Yeah. Which was, like, that was just hilarious.
He's like, you told me to distract her.
And yeah, again, at the end of the episode or towards the end, you see the fact that they, Hollyhock, you know, essentially gets abandoned by BoJack and then goes around and manages to eventually, like going door to door, and then BoJack has a change of heart and decides to go find her. So a lot of development squeezed into one episode, like that's usually fodder for a couple of episodes. So I guess I'm just kind of intrigued to see where they're going with this storyline.
Yeah, I think it's definitely something very new to the show, like a brand new relationship that we haven't seen develop, and also one that's obviously a new kind of relationship in that it's like BoJack as a parent. Yeah, I mean, I agree. I thought that it was interesting because at the beginning of the episode, he was like a lot more dismissive of her. He was like, I don't like really care about you at all. And then I think anytime someone is trying to connect with him, like he's like, is so easily becomes like emotionally dependent on other people.
Yeah.
And you kind of saw that where it was like they went through the whole list at the end. And then at the end of the episode, it's like, there's someone else. And then she just looks at the brown Mercedes-Benz, like, Carla Mercedes-Benz Brown.
I also love the funny Tonya Harding joke. That was just completely unrelated to the plot of the episode.
Always leave me weak in the knees.
Yep.
That was really good. Yeah,
that was pretty funny.
Yeah, so I thought that that relationship is probably going to be one of the interesting new developments this season and something I'm excited to see going forward. And then for Mr. Peanut Butter and Diane, Diane is obviously very anti-fracking. Mr. Peanut Butter really couldn't care less, but his campaign is pro-fracking. And then they obviously have relationship troubles at the same time, kind of because of the whole governor's race, and then Mr. Peanut Butter's ex-wife being the campaign manager, and she at one point has a line to Diane where she's like, yeah, like, I'm really enjoying, like, seeing your marriage fall apart, which is kind of shitty of her. But what was your impression of this episode from that front?
I think that the ideological conflict between Diane and Mr. Peanut Butter is definitely fodder for a lot of really good, you know, expanding that to their marital conflict. And it was only, I was actually pretty surprised by the ending. You had sort of this, Diane takes this kind of serious left turn where she then publishes this, the anti-fracking story, which it actually ends up bringing them together.
Well, there's the anti-fracking story and then the anti-Mr. Peanut Butter story.
Yeah, and they have, like, that actually, you know, manages to net them sexually, which was definitely a lot of sexual angles in this episode, which I thought was interesting. But, yeah, I thought it was, it's rare that you see Mr. Peanut Butter that angry, like, angry enough where he smashes Diane's computer and then they get in a big fight and then they have sex. So, definitely, I love the fact that they're giving characters typically, you know, supposed to be as one-dimensional as Mr. Peanut Butter, just happy all the time and, you know, showing that he can get angry and then he can get passionate. And it's just, like, again, I really, really liked it. Although I thought that the criticism of the website, the long-running website joke where they're, you know, it's essentially standard for BuzzFeed, I thought that hit close to home, but definitely funny.
I thought it was really funny. I think my favorite part of that was when Diane is talking with Mr. Peanut Butter's ex-wife, and she's like, oh, your stupid girl website. And Diane's like, it's called Girl Crush. Stupid girl is just a subsection of the website. So that was really funny. I guess let's touch on, like, the tertiary plot real quick, too. And that's with Princess Carolyn trying to get pregnant with her boyfriend. They go to the whatever doctor it is, I don't know, and get, like, a ton of supplies, like, fertility stuff, including the I ovulate bracelet with the Harvey Fierstein voice, which is just such a creepy, creepy voice. And it was just that, like, going throughout the episode of, like, you are ovulating right now. And it's like, oh, God. I don't think anything would be more of a turnoff than Harvey Fierstein's voice coming out of a bracelet.
I love the bit at the end where it's like, how good is your lawyer?
Really good. All right.
Again, another sex-related storyline.
Yeah, I think that's definitely the common theme between all three kind of plot lines in this episode. So I guess before we move to Rick and Morty, what are you looking forward to for the rest of this season? I guess we talked a little bit about the BoJack-Hollyhock relationship, but anything else?
I'm interested to see, like I talked about last episode, what they're doing with Princess Carolyn, because I think that the story in this particular episode with her, you know, with the I ovulate bracelet, felt a little bit like a throwaway, but at the same time, I'm glad they're giving her development, and, you know, it's going to be a matter of time before, you know, something blows up and something happens. Mm-hmm. So I because I think that Princess Carolyn is definitely someone who is really ripe for a lot of very good storylines about humanizing her. And I think that right now they're doing a really good job of humanizing her, even if it's turning into her into like a sex-addled freak who's just all about getting pregnant now. So I think that just overall the theme of parenthood for the whole season is going to be interesting to see how the writers play that out.
Yeah, something I'm looking forward to more is kind of integrating BoJack more with the rest of, like, the established cast. Because so far we've really only seen him interact with Todd. And then, I don't even think Diane or Mr. Peanut Butter or Princess Carolyn know he's back at this point. So kind of getting him back integrated with them, because none of them have seen him for a year either. And you saw how that kind of impacted his relationship with Todd. And it's definitely going to impact his relationship with everyone else, too. So that'll be really interesting to see, I think. And I'm looking forward to that more, because so far a lot of the storylines have been kind of separated from each other.
Yeah, definitely a good way to get the season's what looks like the season's main storyline underway after two episodes that was kind of more either putting things in place or wrapping up storylines from last season. And now BoJack is back and we're seeing the repercussions of that. So definitely two strong episodes.
For sure. All right, let's transition over to Rick and Morty. And to do that, we've brought back our very own Alex Boyd.
Hey, everybody. Great to be back.
Great to have you back, Alex. So Rick and Morty, Season 3, Episode 9, The ABCs of Beth. I think one of the biggest complaints of this season, the character we've gotten the least was Beth, and the character we got more than anyone else in this episode was Beth. So I think it was good, just from a broader standpoint, for her to get some more screen time and some more character development.
And there was plenty of character development.
Oh, yeah.
We found out a lot about Beth's past, and they left us on a little bit of a Beth cliffhanger.
A big Beth cliffhanger, mm-hmm. I would say. And I would guess, we'll get to it, but I would guess one that they're not going to resolve anytime soon, if at all.
And that's a Rick and Morty way.
So I guess the episode consisted of Beth bringing up her imaginary childhood playland, Froopy Land, only for Rick to reveal to her that it was not imaginary, but just a world that he created. Which she brought it up because her best friend, when she was a kid, her dad was going to be executed the next day for cannibalism, for eating his her best friend, for eating his son.
As one does.
One does, you know, whatever, just a little bit of cannibalism. Well, there's some more cannibalism, of course. And so I guess she now thinks, oh, Tommy is in Froopy Land. Because, you know, she brought him there and thought it was imaginary, but then it's not. So then if he's in Froopy Land, then obviously his father didn't eat him. Because that is just how that works. So Rick and Beth go to Froopy Land as Morty and Summer go for their weekend at Jerry's, which sounds like a really bad Weekend at Bernie's spinoff. So Rick and Beth in Froopy Land, she's kind of mad at Rick for making this world, because she was like, oh, why didn't you spend time with me? You just, like, sent me off into this world. But it's you know, it seems pretty wonderful. There's nice clouds. There's a rainbow river that you can breathe. The ground is bouncy. And then there's a giant bird that takes Rick off into the sky with claws. And apparently there's not supposed to be any animals. So how did this happen?
I love the Jurassic Park reference I think he makes, where he's like, I know that life finds a way, but this is absurd. I absolutely, like, that was a hilarious, hilarious line.
So, typical Survivor story. Beth's childhood friend Tommy, stranded in Froopy Land, turns to the mystical creatures for physical comfort, and then decides to take the offspring he creates with them, which are some sort of mystical human hybrid, and eat them for food, as anyone would in his position. This puts Beth and Rick in a somewhat sensitive situation as they have to battle these crimes against nature in their quest to bring Tommy back to Earth to save Tommy's innocent dad from the lethal injection.
I think it was really funny how they did, like, the double reveal of that whole Tommy backstory, and the first one was Beth and Jerry after Jerry escapes the bird babies that bite his arm off.
Oh, Rick, right?
Yeah, Rick.
Rick, sorry. And then he has, like, the mechanical arm that he just attaches, which is pretty funny.
And the best thing about the reveal is how explicit they are
right?
with it. You know, Rick and Morty tends to break the fourth wall, especially Rick. But they took it to a whole other level this time.
Yeah.
Where there's a scene where Beth and Rick look sort of straight into the camera, or at least into the distance, and just blare out exposition without any pause. Tommy does the same, and then Rick cautions him to wait because it's too early for the reveal. I mean, this just takes their writing to a whole nother level. It's not even meta. I don't know what you'd call it.
Yeah, I mean, it's efficient, you could say that. The fact that they just blow through exposition as quickly as possible. But again, you know, calling attention to the fact that they are, you know.
Yeah.
That's what they're doing.
It's like they're even calling attention to the fact that, like, they're like, we could do this, but we aren't even doing it to save time. Because then they re-explain the whole thing with the play. Like, all of Tommy's grotesque children.
Right.
Like,
is it lazy or is it genius? I don't know. Maybe it's both.
I think it is both. But then, so Rick and Beth, after seeing the play, which, like, they're even in on it, too. Which is like, yeah, we already know all of this. Like, why are you showing us? They are just like, you know, like, we're out of here. And Rick, like, takes Beth back into regular world outside of Froopy World. And then Rick kind of explains to Beth why he created Froopy Land in the first place, and it wasn't so much because he wanted to get rid of her as because she was just this demon child of Rick who, like, had her make. He goes through, and it's like a list of, like, two dozen, like, crazy items. I think the most outrageous was the talking switchblade that he made her. But then, like, false fingerprints and, like, all kinds of crazy stuff.
And that minute-to-two-minute sequence, I'm not sure if that's a middle finger to the audience or a tip of the hat. It's, again, just, you know, Harmon and Roiland making fun of the fact that they're making a TV show in their TV show.
Yeah. So I think, like, that was pretty... Beth's face was interesting. Like, he wasn't giving, like, a whole lot, but, like, watching Beth's face during that scene was kind of interesting as she kind of begins to come to the realization of, like, how much like Rick she is. And so she eventually decides to go and get Tommy back herself without Rick. And so she goes back into Froopy Land and confronts Tommy as Beth. And then once he realizes that she is Beth, because he didn't know before, you know, he, as part of the Tommy story, Beth pushed Tommy into Honey to get him trapped in Froopy Land and left him there.
Which we still never know what really happened.
We don't know for sure. Beth calls it, when it's explained during the play, she calls it fake news. And then she gives, like, a line where, like, he just wants an apology from her, basically, and she's not going to give it to him. And then she's like, I'm sorry that you think you need an apology. And Rick gives that exact same line to Beth.
And then she says, like, God, I'm just like my father.
Yeah. And then she has, like, a negative realization that and a positive one. And she's like, I'm, like, this, like, super, like, smart, like, evil in a way, but also, like, powerful person. And then so she starts killing all of Tommy's grotesque children. And then eventually returns to Rick, who they have, like, a super heart-to-heart conversation of kind of, he's like, you're not evil, you're smart, and, like, you can do anything you want, but, like, you have to choose, basically. And then he offers her the choice of whether to be, because they decide, Beth doesn't get Tommy, and so they decide to make a clone of him to save Tommy's father from being executed. But then also, Rick can make a clone of Beth, whereas, so she can go off and do whatever, but then Beth, you know, the clone Beth will still be with her family, or she can choose to be with her family and, like, be happy with that decision. And we don't know what she chooses.
Because you get a brief clip at the end when Morty and Summer come back and they sit down for dinner, and Beth, I mean, you'll have to go back and, like, reanalyze that, like, 15-second clip, but I don't know, she seemed kind of robotic to me, but that's maybe what I was just looking for, because I thought that was, the twist was going to be that she took the deal, but then it still leaves it a little ambiguous at the end. And like we said earlier, it's probably not going to be resolved next episode, so.
I wouldn't be surprised if they never resolved it, to be honest.
Yeah, I could see that. I mean, it looks like she takes the twist. She takes the deal from that brief little clip, but it's weird. you know, Rick's had some heart-to-hearts before, but they're kind of quickly negated at the beginning of the next episode. They're in a simulation, or he had some ulterior motive, and I can't really see that happening here. It was a very, very different scene, and especially with Beth, because all these secondary characters really typically are cartoon characters. Jerry certainly is one, and they really flesh out her backstory, and she becomes much more sympathetic, which... she absolutely was not in the first two seasons.
And I think that what was kind of brilliant about this episode was that the show up until this point has been always hinting that Beth and Rick are essentially just parallels of each other, but Beth never really acknowledges it. And then this episode just takes that idea and runs with it and really delves into the parallels between those two and how Beth just takes after her father, even going as far as to have her directly reference that herself. But of course, being Rick and Morty, like, they do it in, you know, an entertaining, funny, and very insightful way.
Yeah, and if it shows how similar they are, it also shows kind of the two different choices that you can make. Rick, you know, leaning into his narcissism, and Beth trying to live a normal life and failing to. And it'll be really interesting to see if Beth changes paths or if Rick is, you know, steps up to fill a void if she did take the choice.
Yeah. So we'll probably find out the answer in like two seasons when they,
in a couple
they
of
bring
years.
Real Beth back.
See you in 4 years for that podcast. I guess let's go through the B plot of Morty, Summer, and Jerry with Jerry's new alien girlfriend, Kiara.
Much more typical Jerry plot.
I loved this plot. This was so funny.
Well, so you don't realize that he has an alien girlfriend at first. They get to his apartment, and like as before, they're like, oh, he like sleeps until night. And, like, you get, like, a little flash in the Jerry episode where Rick and Jerry go on an adventure of, like, how kind of... He's living in, like, kind of shitty conditions. But, you know, you get there and it's, like, a super nice apartment. And then Jerry, like, is using telekinesis. And you're like, okay, something's going on. And then, like, you get the reveal of him having the alien girlfriend... Which was funny how he brought it up. I was like, yeah, they went through the alien dating website that Rick kept mentioning, like, when Jerry and Beth were still married, which is pretty funny.
Because I don't think they specified whether or not he recommended it for Beth or for Jerry.
Jerry.
You can take a guess.
I sort of interpreted it as neither one did specify, which was funnier than... Yeah, funnier that way.
I thought it was Jerry. Whatever. Let's argue about that and not pay attention to the episode.
And Morty and Summer have continued their trend of just being completely fed up with all their parents, their entire home life, and really just... separating themselves from the plot as much as possible, which I'm not tired of at all.
No, I think it's pretty funny. I mean, you definitely saw that in the second episode of the season where they go to, like, the Mad Max world. And they've been doing that a lot where, like, setting up stuff. Like, they set up, even with the Beth stuff in this episode, they set that up a bit with, like, the therapy scenes mm-hmm. from the Pickle Rick episode, which is a funny enough, like, thing that I never thought I would say. But yeah, so Jerry kind of has rushed into this new relationship as his kids are kind of pointing out in an annoyed fashion. And this Kiara is really, really all about the hunt.
Oh yeah, loves the hunt.
Loves the hunt.
Celebrates hunts by hunting.
we will celebrate tomorrow with a hunt.
You also have the bit about the soul bonding where, you know, initially, of course, Jerry's like, oh yeah, this is a great idea. This sounds wonderful. And then, you know. I was a really big fan of the exchange between him and Summer at the end, where he, like, turns to Summer and tries to get her to, like, he's basically like, help me out of this. Like, I know I failed, and I know that, you know, I'm pretty much a terrible person, but, you know, I still need help. And Summer just, like, lays it all out for him,
mm-hmm.
and then that's what helps him, and then she just gets out of the car. And then at the end, he finally...
Right, Jerry absolutely reaches a new low, where he has to admit that he's a closeted sexist and racist and... I don't even know how many other labels Summer added to the list, but I mean, before you could call him naive, you could call him pathetic, but this is a new low, even for Jerry.
Yeah, it's not looking great for him.
And which even, is always great to see.
Even after he admits that, like, because Kiara's trying to kill Morty and Summer because Jerry lies and says that, that like, they're to blame for them breaking up initially, and then they have to, like, keep telling him, like, you have to break up with her. Like, even when he's, like, in, they, like, meet up again, and, you know, Jerry's like, let's just run away together, like, and, like, tries to get out of it. And, like, eventually, he finally says it with, like, a lot of encouragement and, like, people yelling at him.
And the hilarious twist is that just as Jerry basically used Kiara to make Beth interested, Kiara was using Jerry to make her alien ex-boyfriend interested in her.
Yeah, so I thought that was a pretty funny parallel, too. Which kind of makes sense, because, like, how appealing is Jerry, really? Let's be honest. And then we get that nice post-credit scene when it's all said and done of Jerry's... It's just, like, the still shot of Jerry's answering machine. where it's, like, the Kiara calls, he's like, oh, my boyfriend's pretty mad. And then, like, the boyfriend calls, and he's like, I'm gonna kill you.
And again, then, they make fun of themselves for their lazy writing.
Yep. And then Rick is like, I got the boyfriend, yeah, I killed him. And then he's like, and I had sex with your ex-girlfriend.
And it'll be great to see if Beth did in fact take the deal and there's just a well-meaning clone kind of left in charge of the Sanchez household, if she'll take Jerry back. Because we know Jerry would never notice. You think of the We Got Apples simulation that he lived in. And, thought he was having the best day of his marriage with Beth, but of course it was just an extremely poorly created simulation to keep him occupied.
Yeah, Jerry's not the smartest amongst all his other flaws, numerous as they are.
The sad thing is, though, I think now even if he knew it was a clone, he'd be okay with it. He just seems to have no self-esteem whatsoever.
That's a pretty good point. I think he probably would. Yeah. I think he won't realize. I think the audience, you both thought that she had taken the deal because she seemed like a little robotic, but I think the point of the clone is that they're not at all robotic. Like, they're an exact replica. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So I feel like they might have... I agree that it did seem a little bit robotic, but, like, they might have put that in deliberately to kind of, like, try
Beth
to...
Beth also yeah, seems to reach a new... A kind of a newfound appreciation for her home and for the kids and even Jerry at the end of the episode, too, after seeing everything that Rick has to go through. So you can't write anything off. Not on this show.
Oh, certainly not, but... We can write off the possibility of finding out soon, I would assume.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. The sad news, of course, is that this was the second to last episode of the season. We only got one more.
That's right. And there are so many plot lines that we have no idea what's going to happen. And like you said, there's no way they can all wrap up tomorrow.
Yeah.
Next week, rather.
So I hope there's a slightly shorter wait for the next season to come out. But I doubt it. If it means them taking their time to make seasons that have been this good,
that's how I feel. This season held up in my mind, and I was worried that it wouldn't, especially after maybe episode 1 and 2. And so if this is the time it takes to make seasons that are this good, then take as much time as you need.
Yeah, fair enough. Mm-hmm. Can't really complain about that.
Yeah.
Well, you can, but like,
fair enough. And I will. But I get it.
I'd rather have good Rick and Morty than fast.
Absolutely.
Rick and Morty.
True.
All right, so that's going to bring us to the end of this episode of Channel Chasers. Thank you very much for listening. You can listen to this podcast and all of the other podcasts from the Georgetown Voice on iTunes at the Voice Podcast Network or on other podcast platforms like Stitcher and TuneIn. You can also get these podcasts and all of the great content from The Voice at georgetownvoice.com. You can follow The Voice on Twitter at GTownVoice and Halftime, The Voice's Sports and Leisure blog at HalftimeGU. That's all I've got for you. Thanks again for listening, and see you next week.
See you next week.
Bye, everyone.